The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 4, text number 1, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on July 5th, 2009, in Wellington, New Zealand.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 4, text number 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vyasa Vacha
Iti Bruvanam Samstaya
Muninam Dirgasatrinam
Vridhakulapati Sutam
Pravichcha Shanako Bravit.
Vyasa Uvacha
Iti Bruvanam Samstuya
Muninam Dirgasatrinam
Vridhakulapati
Sutam
Pravischa Shonako Bravit.
Translation and purport by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. On hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly learned leader of all the rishis, engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows, purport. In a meeting of learned men, when there are congratulations or addresses for the speaker, the qualifications of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shaunaka Rishi had all these qualifications, and thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present the Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he had heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous Acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous Acharya, and at the same time he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. That's in italics. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shaunaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yada dittam and yata mati, and therefore he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original Acharya. So, the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of Bhagavatam, so that the real purpose can be served without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes is useless labor, both for the speaker and the audience.
Vandeham Shri
jata. Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, we think of something like, you know, a brain surgeon or a heart transplant surgeon, how expert he must be. To transplant a heart, he can't be some neophyte rookie surgeon. To do a heart transplant surgery, you see, he has to be very, very expert. Do a first-class job, you see. Otherwise the patient will die, isn't it? So, similarly, one who speaks Bhagavatam, he must be very, very expert. To properly represent the previous acharya. On the one hand, he has to present it according to the audience to make it very, very interesting. Not that he's just like a parrot, just like that parrot in, there's one parrot in Tabiuni in the Fiji Islands. He just goes, Haribo, Haribo, Haribo. Is he? But he has no realization. He's thinking if he does this, he'll get some food. That's all. So he has no realization of Haribo. But he goes on chanting it all day long because when he says Haribo, they bring him something to eat. So we can't just be like a parrot, dumb parrot, repeating Bhagavatam philosophy. We have to actually realize what is Bhagavatam philosophy. In other words, to be qualified to actually speak Bhagavatam, you have to be a person Bhagavatam. You have to live the Bhagavatam. You see? If one does not live the Bhagavatam, simply speak the Bhagavatam, he's not qualified to speak the Bhagavatam. One has to live the Bhagavatam. He has to be a living example of Bhagavatam. You see? Such a person, he is qualified to speak Bhagavatam. And when he speaks, in a very interesting way, a very attractive way, just suitable for the audience, the pure original intention of the original speaker, you see, is maintained. This is called the parampara system. Evam parampara praptam evam rajarshayo vidu. This knowledge was received through the chain of disciplic succession. So it is our duty, actually. Prabhupada has given us this duty to be pure propagators of the Bhagavatam. Every one of us. Everyone in this movement is meant to be a pure propagator of Bhagavatam. Therefore, we have to live the Bhagavatam. We have to become saintly persons. Not I remain a materialist. No. We have to become saintly. Each and every one of us, we must become saintly. Because it is only if we become saintly that we can properly speak Bhagavatam. Only a sadhu or a saintly person can speak Bhagavatam properly. Of course, there are the professional reciters going on in India, we have seen. Many years ago, I was in Bombay, the time they called it Bombay in those days, with my godbrother Giriraj Maharaj. And he was taking me around doing some preaching. And we stopped by this big pandal. They were doing Bhagavat Saptaha. We went in the afternoon. We didn't go during the actual Saptaha. But he showed me the whole setup, how they did this Bhagavat Saptaha. Some Maharaj's name was Dangri Maharaj. So anyway, there was a huge... The Vyasasana was unbelievable. It was about as high as the ceiling. There was a ladder in the back. You had to climb. To get on the Vyasasana, you had to go and get on a ladder in the back and climb on this huge platform. So... And there was also platforms on the right and left side where you had a whole series of brahmanas who would recite, someone would be reciting first canto, second canto. This is all going on simultaneously, see, in the background. This way they covered all the cantos, see. You'd have the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, 11th, 12th, all the... The main speaker in the middle, he's doing 10th canto, and everybody else is in the background doing this buzz of the other cantos in the background. Because everybody can't wait to get to the, you know, Krishna kissing the gopis. So he sits up there and talks about Krishna kissing the gopis, and everyone's going, blissing out on that, getting ready to go home and have illicit sex that night. You see? And getting all juiced up for illicit sex by hearing about Krishna kissing the gopis. And so that was their so-called Bhagavat Saptaha, you see. So such person, they're not qualified to speak Bhagavatam. Even though they be big celebrated Bhagavat reciters, you see. They're not qualified to speak Bhagavatam. But that person who is strictly following the, as we described last night, the Acharya, Mahajana Panta, you see, Panta, the pathway of the Mahajanas. There are the great Mahajanas, Svayambhur Nadara Shambhu, Kumara Kapilomanu, Pralado Janako Bhishmo, Balir Vayasa Kirviyam. These great acharyas are there. Svayambhur is Brahmanji, Svayambhur Narad Muni, Shambhu is Shiva, Kumaras, Lord Kapila Dev, Svayambhuva Manu, Phalad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj. These are the great Mahajanas, you see. Some people say, why you don't worship Brahma and Shiva? But actually, we do. We worship them as great acharyas by purely preaching this message of Krishna. We worship these great Mahajanas, including Brahma and Shiva. We are the best followers of Brahma and Shiva because we are following that pathway. Not that we just do some begging them for material boons. You see, that is not the best worship. We are, because we're actually following that pathway of these great Mahajanas. We are the best followers of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Svayambhuva Manu, Phalad Mahara, all the great Mahajanas. We are following their pathway, you see. And therefore, we are qualified to speak the message of the Bhagavatam. Because we are following that pathway of the Mahajana. Even a little child can do this. Prabhupada was so happy. Shamasundar Malati's little daughter, Saraswati, yes. She would approach some gentleman in Vrindavan and she would say, "Do you know who is Krishna?" He would say, "No, you tell me. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So Prabhupada said, this is first class preacher, you see. Actually, if you simply have faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you can immediately become a preacher. Not that you have to learn 10,000 shlokas, you see. Simply you have to have faith, firm faith. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are three different classes of devotees there. Kanishta Adhikari, Majjam Adhikari, Uttam Adhikari. Srila Prabhupada describes the Kanishta, he doesn't have faith. He doesn't have faith. Majjam, he has very strong faith. You see, he may not be very learned or very expert in logical arguments, but he has very firm faith. You see. So he is a qualified preacher. And then the Uttamadikari, his distinction is he has that firm faith, but at the same time he is very powerful in philosophical presentation, both logical and scriptural. He's very expert. That is the Prabhupada described that as Uttamadikari. So even if we are not so expert in scriptural evidence and philosophical argument, if we just have that firm faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we tell people, we're not afraid to say to someone, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We just have to have faith and act on that faith courageously. Prabhupada told one of my god sisters how to distribute books in the airport. What she should say when she gives them a book. Prabhupada, you tell them this, that this Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. Just imagine you walk up to somebody in the airport and you hand them the book and you say, "This Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. It has arisen just after the departure of Lord Sri Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance of this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana." And then you hand him the book. You see? In other words, we're not worried about pacifying their material conception about what a person should be like in this material world. We don't need to please the materialists. We just need to please our spiritual masters. We just need to please the acharyas. That's all we need. But we do it intelligently in such a way that they will find it appealing. You see, that's the expertise described here. We have to have faith in the message. At the same time, we should become very, very... We should develop the skill. It's an art. Develop the skill, the art of presenting it in such a way that people go, wow. They call it the wow factor, you see. We should present it with what the wow factor. It should be very expert. I mean, Prabhupada was a master of the wow factor. I mean, he could just say one word and everybody's going, wow. Just the way he would hold his hand or every little thing about Prabhupada. It was the wow factor at every minute. Prabhupada was like that. Everything about him was just amazing. You see? So, that's called expert. You see? Making it appealing. It's interesting, I gave the example of that Haribol parrot in Tavayuni. So, also that word parrot, The Sanskrit is Shuka Parrot. So that Shukadev Goswami, you see, he is called Parrot. He is the original reciter of the Bhagavatam. After hearing it from his father within the womb, he recited it to Parikshit Maharaj. So, why is he called Parrot? Is he like the Haribo Parrot in Tavayuni? No. Of course, the philosophy is stated as it was stated previously. A parrot can do that too, but there's a different meaning to parrot in relation with Shukadeva Goswami than just parroting, saying exactly what he heard. The difference is this, that a parrot, when his beak pierces a mango, the mango becomes even sweeter. So, in this sense, we should all be like parrot. Then when we speak, the philosophy, it becomes enhanced in its sweetness. In other words, by tailor-fitting the message to that particular audience in that particular time and place, you see, then it becomes even sweeter. Now, when a gentleman wants to get a business suit, he can go to a department store, he can pick one up, see. Or he can go, just like in Hong Kong, they have tailors everywhere. You can go to a tailor shop and they'll measure you exactly and make you a business suit, custom fit for every part of your body, just custom fit. So the tailor-made suit, that is considered the first class. So that's how the Bhagavatam should be presented. It should be tailored to that particular audience in that particular time, that particular place. It's like I'm seeing you all now. I'm looking, and it says the face is the index of the mind. So I'm observing your faces as I'm speaking to you. How you're responding, how it's affecting you, how what I'm saying is affecting your consciousness. I'm observing them. And I am adjusting my words accordingly, to try to make it as appealing and as attractive and as interesting as possible. Because actually, unless we become interested in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what will we become interested in? If we don't become interested in the Bhagavatam, we'll be interested in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, or some combination thereof. You see? So, it is a duty of the speaker of the Bhagavatam to present Krishna consciousness so attractively that people will forget about everything else and just want to hear the Bhagavatam. Actually, hearing the Bhagavatam is more wonderful than anything, any pleasure you could get in this material world, even all the way to Brahmaloka. Even if you could get the post of Brahmaji on the topmost planet, to hear the Bhagavatam is actually more relishable than being Brahmaji. It's more relishable than possessing the wealth of Kuvera, the treasure of the demigods. What if I told you right now that, Prabhu, I have good news for you. You just won the lottery. You just won $10 million. You go, wow, $10 million. I just won $10 million. You see? And I said, okay, but now I have some other news for you. We're going to discuss the Srimad Bhagavatam. You go, wow, that's even greater than $10 million. No, see? No, we think, well, okay, but let me go out and cash my $10 million, then we'll think about the Bhagavatam later on. See, it shows you where we're at. That's our level right now. We're still, still down there somewhere in the modes of nature, crawling around in the modes of nature. Because if we were actually Krishna conscious, say, who cares about the $10 million? I got the Bhagavatam coming into my ears right now. That's more valuable than $10 quadrillion. You see, the Bhagavatam coming into my ear right now, or coming out of my mouth, is the same thing. Whether you're speaking it or whether you're hearing it, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter whether you're speaking it or hearing it. Just to have, it's associating with the Bhagavatam, you see. So anyway, I can ask you this some questions. Yes. Yes, it is described that when the sons of Lord Brahma, the four Kumaras, refused to get married, actually they refused to even grow up, they kept themselves in the pre-puberty stage of little boys, Kumaras. He wanted them to, he had a duty, Brahmaji had a duty to populate the universe, and he was generating offspring who would then take up that activity, but they refused to obey their father. I mean, that's normally, that's considered adharma. A son is supposed to obey his father, especially if his father is a pure devotee. So, of course, for a higher purpose, a Krishna conscious purpose, one can disobey one's father. In this case, they wanted to remain brahmacharis, and that was a bona fide Krishna conscious desire, but that made Brahmaji very angry because he had his duty to do. He expected them to help him do it. And Brahma came out of his forehead. I mean, Shiva came out of his forehead. His anger manifested in the form of Lord Shiva. Yeah.
Why is it that Brahma is Jiva Tattva, but Shiva is not considered, like,
am I right? Brahma is Jiva Tattva, and Shiva is Shiva Tattva. Yeah. So why?
I just wanted to know, is Shiva Tattva higher?
Shiva Tattva is considered to be in between. In that sense, it is considered. Right? It's in between Jiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva. Yes, it is considered higher in that sense. It's like milk, when it comes in contact with the yogging agent, becomes transformed into yogurt. So, actually, when Vishnu, the Vishnu Tattva in contact with the material nature becomes transformed into Shiva Tattva. So, in that, yes, he is considered in that sense to be an in-between position between Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva.
How come Lord Shiva appeared from the Jiva Tattva?
Well, Brahma's duty is to fill up the universe. He has a duty given to him by Lord Vishnu. That now you're meant to, here you are, you're given the job of creation. Now you're to bring everybody in here and fill up the whole show, the material existence. So Shiva's role is the destroyer. So how Shiva could come first? He's the destroyer. And Brahma has a specific job of creation. So he's meant to it's meant through the agency of Brahma, all the living entities who are going to be in this material existence, they come through Brahma's agency. So it's natural that Shiva would come through him.
The question is, Lord Brahma is Jiva Tattva, and how Shiva can appear from him. It's similar to, like,
by Krishna's arrangement. What is the difficulty?
It's something like Krishna appears from Devaki and Vasudeva.
Yeah. Any other question? Yes.
How do we evaluate our spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness?
How do you measure it? Are you maintain it?
How do we evaluate?
Oh, evaluate it. Okay. Of course, there are many ways you can measure it, but how much you have a taste for the holy name is a very good indicator. How much taste you have for devotional service is another indicator. How much respect you have for Vaishnavas, that's another indicator. Because actually, we can only relish the holy name to the extent that we love the devotees. How much do you love Krishna's devotees? That's a very good indicator. How much do you become inspired and enlivened meditating on the devotees, thinking about their wonderful qualities? Does that answer your question? Yes?
Maharaj, in the south of India, there are lots of temples which show Sukha Goswami with a face of a parrot. Is that...
They do what?
Sukha Goswami. He's not called Sukha Goswami, but just Sukadev. And he's shown with the face of a parrot.
Parrot face.
Yeah.
He says that in South they showed that the Sukadev was...
He had the head of a parrot?
Yeah.
It's in the temples.
Yeah, it's in the temples.
Yeah.
And
temples in South
India. Prabhupada never done like that. We take Prabhupada's version. We don't take their version. Always stick with Prabhupada's version and then you won't be confused. You start thinking, in India there's thousands and millions of different opinions about this thing and that thing. Just stick with Prabhupada and you'll never become confused. Now, if you think, in this temple they say this, you'll get really bewildered. Just stick with Prabhupada's vision. You'll be in good shape. Questions, Mark? Yeah?
Does Lord Shiva has a lifespan?
Lifespan?
Lifespan of Lord Shiva.
Do you know about Shiva's lifespan?
He is eternal.
There is also a Mahesh Dham, which is between the material world and the spiritual world. Yeah, I'm not an expert to say. I'm not an expert on all the details of Lord Shiva. I'm not expert on Lord Shiva. I'm not, because I'm not a Shivite. Yeah.
Did Srila Prabhupada in anywhere mention anything about having Bal Gopal on our altar?
I've never heard anything about that. I never saw that Prabhupada did that in any altar. Never. In any temple. That's the example. It was never done that I saw anywhere. It's very popular in Vrindavan, a little Ladu Gopal. Huh?
That's from Vallabhacharya. It's Gopal is from Vallabhacharya.
Vallabhacharya, yeah. Yeah, it's not our...
Prabhupada was that Krishna is never alone. He's always with his associates.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada...
Yeah, we don't worship Krishna alone like that. That's right. Any other questions?
As you have said that when a speaker presents Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, he has to present in a way that we should say wow. So is it that we just say wow, or we should focus on what the speaker is saying and practice in the way?
Now the point is, it should be very inspiring and enlivening, that one that one gets a higher taste for Krishna consciousness. It's not that it just be, I'm not saying the Bhagavatam reciter is expert at cracking jokes, everybody has a good laugh, not that kind of a thing. But I'm talking about that one actually becomes inspired to give up sense gratification. That's the wow that I'm talking about. As I was quoting last night from Jamunacharya, Navadasa Damanunyata Rantu Maasit, he experiences a higher, newer and newer rasa. It's just exciting and enlivening thing, which is more wonderful than any even sex pleasure, which is the topmost pleasure of material life, sex pleasure becomes, get rid of it, you know, it's like a dirty thing, let's get out of here. Because I'm telling, that's what I'm speaking of. One becomes completely, totally in state of ecstasy. To be able to chant Hare Krishna, to be able to serve Krishna, to be able to bow down before the spiritual master. These things, you see, become completely, you know, the most enlivening, thrilling experiences. And this is what I'm speaking about. Anything else? Yeah?
Maharaj, yesterday you spoke about pure devotional service.
Mm.
So what happens if we do devotional service and then mix ritualistic things together? How it works? Means if I do this and then it has to be done this way. And
if you mix in ritualism, well, that one has to follow the Acharya Panta, the pathway that Prabhupada has given us. Whatever ritual, whatever ceremonies or ritual he has given us, that we do. It's like we, for initiations and weddings, Prabhupada gave us the fire sacrifice ceremony. But now I see the devotees want to make it a ritual thing. Yeah, we can have fire sacrifice for a new house, a new car, you know. It's just going too far. You have a fire sacrifice for this, a fire yogi for that. I mean, this is what Prabhupada gave us. You do the fire yogi for wedding, and do it for initiation, and then engage in hearing and reading, chanting, and preaching. The whole world is out there waiting to hear about Krishna. You see, so we invent all these things. Instead of going out to preach, we want to sit around and do fire sacrifice ceremonies, you know. Invent all these rituals to keep, so we have something to do, so we don't have to go out and preach. We should be very keen for going out to preach Krishna consciousness, distributing books, Harinam Sankirtan, organizing programs, festivals, Namahat preaching, all kinds of things. We should be very enthusiastic to get more and more and more people. You see, that's our focus. Not to increase the number of rituals. You know, introduce, you know, 10,000 new rules and regulations to ISKCON from here and there, so we can be busy doing these rules and regulations all day long and think we're very good devotees. You see. Niyam agraha. To be too much into rules and regulations can cause one to fall down. Or to be too neglectful also, yeah.
Thanks, Maharaj. I think you have picked. I was not going to discuss in public, actually. But there's been some debate going on since last week, because we all know that Srila Prabhupada bent the rules many times in his poem for certain reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that they were done for valid reasons. There was some debate last week because there were two versions presented.
Two verses?
Yeah. Well,
versions.
Okay.
It was a question which was raised by some of the Matajis.
Mm-hmm.
And Devamrita Swami was here. So
Devamrita Swami. Okay.
And his answer was, I was a bit taken back with his answer, but then it was about whether when the Matajis are not pure, whether they should be allowed in the temple, and whether they can do service or they cannot do service.
I just read Prabhupada's answer to this issue. It's in the Veda base. Prabhupada said, I should look up the technical answer that Prabhupada gave. That's the best thing. There's two different, I think there's two technical terms that Prabhupada talks about. There's, I think, I forget that he gave two different terms two technical terms. According to this pathway, it's okay. The women can do it. And according to this one, they're not supposed to do it. There's two different pathways. And one, it's okay. The other, it's not. So I have to look it up until I can answer it very authoritatively. I found it, read it just the other day in the Veda base.
That would be really nice, Maharaj, because I think there is a bit of confusion at the moment with the devotees, because and also if there is because then the next day Devaki Nandana was here, and Devaki Nandana from Mumbai,
mm-hmm.
and he said that according to the Vedic realization or Vedic literatures that we have been following, he said there should be restrictions on what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be. So I asked him whether there was a GVC ruling on these issues. And there are, there are lots of issues, like, when you have a baby, when the mothers have a baby, when should they come to the temple, what period they shouldn't be coming, and those sort of things. And still there, and then if there is a death in the family, whether the patient should be coming to the temple or not. So I think there are...
There are certain rules, even in the Nectar Devotion, about not... If you're a Sudra, you have to wait so long. If you're a Vaishya, you have to wait so long. If you're a Kshatriya, you have to wait so long. If you're Brahmin, there are rules like that mentioned in the Nectar Devotion. But the actual position is, one is taking up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. He is transcendental to all of these ashrams, so he can come immediately. The thing is, we want to become fixed in Krishna consciousness. We're going to deny somebody, you can't come in the temple. What if they leave their body and they come to the temple? Well, my father just died, I've come to purify my consciousness. My mind is bewildered, I've come to take shelter of Gaurantai, to purify my heart and beg his mercy that my father can be delivered. And we say, no, you're not allowed in the temple. And then he has a traffic accident on his way home and he dies. How will we feel then? You see, we didn't let him in the temple. We steal the door, so you can't come in. Nectar, this rule says you're not a prophet. We would have been very unhappy if we wouldn't let that man in the temple. They should take bath after they come from the crematorium. If that one should do that. But even then, I wouldn't make a hard and fast rule out of it. One should do that. Prabhupada even said that you're supposed to bathe before you attend the arti ceremony also, but Prabhupada, it's better to come unbathed to attend it. If you come in late from some kirtan, you don't have time for a bath, it's better to come unbathed and attend the ceremony. There's so many things in Prabhupada's books where he talks about. You can see what Prabhupada's mood is. We have to understand Prabhupada's mood and how he applied the rules and regulations. Prabhupada, when he came to America, he was keeping his bhoga in a refrigerator, and he noted that there was meat in the refrigerator. Now, you can't keep bhoga in the refrigerator. You're going to offer it to Krishna if there's meat in the refrigerator. That's against the Vedic rules. But Prabhupada noted, there's meat in the refrigerator. What am I supposed to do, go back to India? I came to America, I sacrificed everything to serve my spiritual master's order, but now there's meat in the refrigerator, so I have to cancel the whole thing. I'm just going to go back to Vrindavan. Prabhupada could have done that. Well, I can't follow strictly my rules here in New York City. I'm just going to go back to India and forget spreading Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world. But Prabhupada said, no, I had to break the rule to serve my spiritual master's order. He said, if I cried that I broke the rule. No, Prabhupada had to do such things. So there was a whole morning walk in Mayapur called the proper application of rules and regulations. So Prabhupada said, of course, you shouldn't break a rule. And when your spiritual master is present on this planet, you should consult with him before breaking a rule if you think it's necessary for preaching. Should always take permission, not that you just do it on your own volition. That's very dangerous. Prabhupada sent out two disciples to preach in Russia, and he told them, if you have to eat meat, you can eat meat to preach in Russia. Now, that's really against the rules, isn't it? You can eat meat? And the one disciple, he said, Prabhupada, what about my Krishna consciousness? He was really... the idea of going to Russia was... Prabhupada said, damn your consciousness. Prabhupada wanted this movement. He didn't care how bewildered this disciple would get. Just go there and somehow preach. I don't care if your mind is completely bewildered. You go there and start this movement. Prabhupada, that's how strong he was. So even Bhakti Siddhanta said that they could serve meat to attract people to come and hear about Krishna. He gave that instruction in the Gaudiya Mathas. They never did it, but he actually told them they could do them. So not that I'm not saying that we should do that, but it's just an example.
Also, on the Kadashis, Prabhupada was getting everybody to distribute the grains from Mayapur temple, and Gaudiya people, devotees that criticized Prabhupada. But Prabhupada said that they are going to eat the grains, so what if they take Radha Madhava's prasadam?
I know for the as far as the ladies and the doing the puja, I've read where Prabhupada said home worship they can do. I know in ISKCON we've made it, our standard has been that they, the ladies during their menstrual, they don't go on the altar and they don't cook in the kitchen. That's been a standard in ISKCON.
Maharaj, can they come to the temple?
Yes, of course. Yes, yes. They're absolutely, they must come to the temple. Yeah, that's not our, that is not, Prabhupada, there's, actually Prabhupada said even, Prabhupada, I'll find the exact quote, but I read this the other day, Prabhupada said they can even go on the altar, according to according to one of the standard ways of understanding the spiritual life, even they can go on the altar, what is even coming in the temple, they even go on the altar. Although we do follow that rule of them not going on the altar. No, they are completely welcome in the temple. Totally welcome.
Can I speak? This procedure that Devakinanda Prabhu said, it is done in India because the people criticize there, so that is done in Vrindavan temple. It's not outside. Just to pacify the Indian Vrijvasis so they don't become critical. So it is done that also in Mumbai temples. They are following that principle because all the Indians have come to that. But in ISKCON, we are allowed to come to the temple. We can make the garlands, which will be purified by the pujaris. But that can be done.
If you really want to get fanatical, some people say, "Well, I can't even. Can I touch my Java bees during a menstrual cycle?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have to jam on a clicker during my menstrual. Huh?
There were even some questions about paying obeisances to Srila
Prabhupada. This is Niyam Agraha. If one gets too much into rules and regulations, they will fall down from Krishna consciousness. This is an example of Niyam Agraha. Example of Niyam Agraha. I mean, I just see what Prabhupada established, you know. What was going on during Prabhupada's time? How he established his style of how ISKCON should go on. We observed that, you see. We never saw such things when Prabhupada was here. We never saw clickers when Prabhupada was here also. That's another issue. There was no such thing as clicker japa when Prabhupada was here. That's somebody's concoction. There's a saying, when the cat's away, the mice will play. So all these new concoctions, you know, since Prabhupada left. Clickers and this thing and that thing.
We are trying to follow so many rules and regulations, but simple thing as coming to Mangalati and Bhagavatam class, we are avoiding those things.
Yeah, we're very proud that I follow this rule and that rule, because I never get up for Mangalati. I mean, come on, you know. I'm very proud that I am strict Brahmin, you know. I don't let my wife come to this temple during her menstrual. I'm Pukka Brahmin. But I never get up from Mangalarti. I never come to Bhagavatam. But I'm a great devotee because I don't let my wife come to Bhagavatam during her menstrual. I mean, come on, this is really, you know, off the track. Really off the track. Yeah. Immediately they must come and bring the child also. Immediately. You want the child to become a devotee or what? Or do you want to you want your child to become a ritualistic Brahmin? Or do you want him to become a pure Vaishnava? Bring him to the temple immediately. To hell with your ritualism. Bring him to the temple immediately. Let him get purified.
I want to make a point here.
Huh?
When ladies are contaminated, or we go to the crematorium, or the woman has given a birth, they are contaminated. What is the problem? Way to purify them? Is that they stay in home, they will be purified, or they come and chant Krishna's name, they will be purified. Or the temple will get contaminated.
The temple is a place for becoming purified. If you're contaminated, come to the temple. Get purified.
So that's what we have to say, how we are getting purified. Staying out and not chanting or what? Or we can come to Krishna and that way we... Krishna is not getting contaminated. We are becoming purified. By coming near Krishna. So in all circumstances, we should be coming to Krishna, not that we stay away from Krishna. Krishna is not getting contaminated. That's the main point.
I think there is a Maharaj. I'm sure you will have your contact with the level of GVC is much more than. And I've requested Devi Nandana and also Devamrita Swami that I think it's high time that the GVC comes up with a documentation. Setting up these rules because I think there is so much confusion in
there.
The GBC has already published that book.
If it is, then why are we discussing it? The question is that I don't think it is clearly being stated.
It's clearly mentioned in Vaishnava etiquette under cleanliness and hygiene. It's clearly mentioned in under Vaishnava etiquette. If it's under cleanliness and hygiene.
Which book? The one that published by the GBC?
Vaishnava etiquette.
Vaishnava etiquette. Who published that book? You said, wait a minute, let me get his. You said it's clearly mentioned in the Vaishnava etiquette. Who published that Vaishnava etiquette?
I think it's Radha Gopinath Temple.
The Chopati Temple.
Oh, yeah, but that's their. That's their temple's thing. That doesn't mean that their thing applies to the whole movement necessarily. It's because they publish a book on Vaishnava. That doesn't become the standard for ISKCON.
No, it says that the Matajis can come to the temple.
Yeah, huh?
Positive.
They can.
Yeah.
Actually, I've read that book. I find it to be 99% fantastic. Though I have a 1% objection to that book. They say that they indicate in that book that, you know, ideally the householders should only have sex for procreation. That means, but if they have it, we'll condone them to have non-procreational sex too. That's the one objection I had to that book that they put out.
I think they changed it up.
It gives the implication, it gives the unspoken approval that, well, if you're not really ideal yet, it's okay, you can mess around and have some illicit sex with your wife, it's okay, you're still a good devotee, it's okay. That kind of a thing. That's what it implies. I'm strongly opposed to that one thing. Otherwise, their manual is very nice. I read that manual. The reason I had to deal with that issue is I have a very nice young householder disciple in Houston who wrote me, said, Gurudev, I found this manual. Is it good? Can I follow this? Can I base my Krishna consciousness on this manual? So I had to look it over to see if I could give it my full approval or not. For him to follow it. And I said, well, this is really good, you know. It's full of really nice things. But then I read this one point. I said, this is a very good manual, but this point is wrong. They have given this license that householders can have illicit sex. And I wrote them and complained about it. I don't know if they've changed it, but
yeah. Someone said that they have changed it.
They have?
Someone said it.
So that'd be good if they changed it. Because that was the one, that was the sand and the sweet rice. Actually, there's no reason for householders to have illicit sex. It's just like, I'll give you a good example. I mean, I was a young brahmachari, I remember, and it was one house in Miami years ago. One householder man came up to me and he said, you know, Prabhu, I don't know why you told me. He was so inspired and alive and he had to share it with me. He said, last night my wife and I, we chanted 50 rounds. We were going to have sex to produce a child. But after chanting those 50 rounds, we were so high on the mantra, we said, let's wait till next month. You see, they didn't want to come down. And we were thinking, yeah, we're going to have sex, have a kid, you know, we can have some bona fide Krishna conscious sex life now. But the chanting was so wonderful. It was so sweet. They were flying so high in the mantra. They didn't want to come down to the male-female platform to have gross, you know, to have sex. So it's not an artificial renunciation. We just have to train our householders how to relish the nectar. But they wouldn't even want to have sex life. It's not you can't have sex life because Prabhupada said. Not like that. No, but we wouldn't even want to. Who would want to come down to the gross bodily platform, you see? You see, it's gross. I had a friend, actually he never became a devotee, but he introduced me to the Maha Mantra. I'm totally indebted to that friend of mine. I've been trying to find him for years to thank him. But he used to call sex a body nasty. I thought it was a really good term, a body nasty. It's like passing stool, really. It's just a gross bodily function. Passing stool also feels good, you know, or passing urine feels good too. That doesn't mean it's something great and wonderful because it feels good. It's gross. Passing urine, passing stool, and having sex are gross bodily activities. But if you use it for Krishna, then it's spiritual. It's wonderful. It's glorious. We don't discourage our householders from having sex life and producing children. We encourage, yes, it's a very wonderful thing. Have as many children as you can maintain. If you can have 100 kids, we're very happy. I have one godbrother, he has like, how many? 9 children or something. He couldn't maintain them in the West, he took them to India. And he's maintaining them nicely in India. He started a business in India, a cheese business. And he's maintaining his big family, very nice, whole family is Krishna conscious. Great! He's like a guru and his disciples, you know, he's a huge... Got a whole thing, and these 9 devotees, I mean, they're great. It's fantastic if you can have devotee kids, you know. Have as many as you can maintain and make them devotees. We're all in favor of it. Actually, the Muslims are using this now to take over the world. They're out in Europe now. All the Europeans are having abortions, but all the Muslims have immigrated to Europe. They're having kids like anything. And with if the demographics continue like they're doing, within a few years, the Muslims will rule Europe. Without having to do any terrorism or anything, just by sex life. They're going to take over the UK, there'll be Muslims, the whole Europe will become Muslim. The demographics are working that way right now. So we have no objection if devotees want to have a lot of kids, because we want to outdo the Muslim, you see.
Muslims don't make them
devotees. Huh?
Don't make them devotees.
However,
them says one should raise
them. They raise them to be something other than pure devotees, you see.
For the devotees, there is an injunction, one should not become a father or mother or guru or any, unless they deliver their dependence.
Yeah. Okay. So anything else? Yeah.
Maharaj, yeah, yesterday you mentioned little bit on that. Do we have to have a living guru, or we can think Prabhupada as a guru?
Yes and no. Because there's 2 kinds of gurus. There's siksha guru and diksha guru. You can take an unlimited number of siksha gurus from present and departed Vaishnavas. In that department, there's full freedom. Prabhupada, you can take Prabhupada as a siksha guru, you can bow down to him, as your Siksha Guru. Pray to him as your Siksha Guru. Aren't we training you to worship him every day in Guru Puja as your Guru? Yes. So you can have Prabhupada even mentions in, I think it was Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, how he is our Guru. Prahlad Maharaj is our Guru. And he's departed Vaishnava. So all of Kunti Devi, she's certainly our spiritual master from her prayers of Queen Kunti. So yes, for Siksha Guru, you can have an unlimited number of Siksha Gurus from devotees who are present on the planet and from devotees who have departed. But for Diksha, that's another thing. You cannot get your Diksha from a departed spiritual master. You must get Diksha from a Acharya who is present on the planet. That is very strict principle. You don't see anyone taking Diksha from a departed. Is there any example in our Vaishnava culture, in our history, Vaishnava history, of anyone taking Diksha from a departed Vaishnava? Is there any such example given anywhere? You see? If we could do that, we could say, well, I think I'll take my Diksha from Prabhupada. Actually, one foolish godbrother, he advised one lady that if you want to be Prabhupada's disciple, all you got to do is you go to Vrindavan and you take your beads and touch them to Prabhupada's samadhi, and then you become initiated by him. I mean, this is completely bogus. Can you imagine? You just got to take your beads and touch them onto Prabhupada's samadhi. But it was on the altar, but I forget.
Samadhi.
To the samadhi. Take your beads to the samadhi and touch them, and now you're initiated by Prabhupada. I mean, this is ridiculous. Prabhupada never authorized such a system. So, well, if you can do that, then why not, then why not go to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati samadhi and become initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati? In Mayapur, there's his samadhi is there. Or why not go to find out where Bhakti Vinod's samadhi is? Go to, what is that, that mandir where Lord Chaitanya departed? Why not go to Chota Gopinath temple in Jagannath Puri and touch your beads to the altar and become a direct initiated disciple of Lord Chaitanya? Wow! I'm right up there with Godbrother of the Goswamis now. Wow, I really got it made now. You see the point? Why not just go to, the Krishna Janma place in Mathura and touch your bead bag there and become a direct disciple of Krishna himself. Now you're Arjuna's Godbrother, You got the point? Yeah. 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 But it doesn't mean that Prabhupada is dead and gone. You see? It doesn't mean that he's dead and gone. And Prabhupada is present, actually. He's present right now, sitting with us, actually. He's present here. He may say, oh, it's just deity, But I have seen, and there was many witnesses. We brought Jaya Pataka Swami also in to see. We were at the Panit, and he also witnessed the Prabhupada deity in Atlanta at the annual Panihati festival during the height of the noon kirtan in the middle of the festival. Prabhupada started crying. He had a tear coming on his right eye, right cheek. Everyone could see clearly there's a tear coming out of his eye. Prabhupada was crying in ecstasy with the kirtan. So it's not that Prabhupada is dead and gone. But he gave order that when I'm physically departed, then you become the disciple of my disciple. So do you want to be Prabhupada's disciple? Of course, everyone should be Siksha disciples of Prabhupada. So what does it mean? If you're a disciple, it means you obey his order, doesn't it? Prabhupada, I am yours. I am your follower. I am your disciple. I surrender to you. So very good. Now you take initiation from one of my disciples. But Prabhupada, I don't want to be initiated by you. I want to be your disciple. All right, then my order is you take the initiation from one of my disciples. You see, there's a fallacy here in logic. It is called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, half hen logic. You know the story of the farmer who had a hen who was laying big, big, wonderfully opulent eggs? You know that story? You know? Yeah. Does everyone know that story? Yes. You know that story? She doesn't know, so I'll tell. So the hen was laying magnificently wonderful eggs that got a huge price in the market, you see. And the farmer was so happy, I'm making such a nice profit of this hen laying these eggs. But there's one problem. This hen has a voracious appetite. I've got to figure out a way to... It's cutting into my profit margin. Voracious appetite. But one day I know what I'll do. I'll cut off the head of the hen. And that way I just get the eggs. I won't have to feed it anymore. You think, I'm so smart. He was feeling so proud. What, I'm such a genius. I came up with this great idea and he did it and boom. And he was waiting for the eggs. They used to come every day. What had happened to the eggs? Couldn't figure it out. He's so stupid. He couldn't figure out why he wasn't getting eggs anymore, you see, after cutting off the head of the hen. So you say, well, this half of Prabhupada I like very much, a spiritual master. This half, he orders me to take initiation from one of his disciples. This side I don't like. And cut. Then you don't get Prabhupada at all. You don't get him. You don't get that relationship with his siksha. You see? Shishya. You don't get that relationship. If you want to actually be a shishya, a student of Prabhupada, then you must follow his instructions. Then you become his true shishya, his true student. You understand? Yeah. So, 3 minutes left. Till 9 o'clock. Any other questions? All right then, we will stop here. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.